I've been chatting with the guys on the editorial desk, and you can read more from Tom Marquand in an interview in this Saturday's bumper Derby Day edition of the Racing Post. On sale in all the usual places across the UK and Ireland. Don't miss it. Welcome back to the Racing Riot podcast. How good does it feel to hear that, Charlie? It
feels fantastic. I've got to be honest, once all this came about, I wondered if that might have been the end of this podcast that we've had such fun with over the last few months, but it's not. Like a phoenix from the ashes, we've risen again and we're back, hopefully better than ever.
I thought that was it. Nail in the coffin. I thought, there's no way this comes back. But lucky to be here in your living room. Feeling good as ever. 2 meter rule, of course. Today on the show, it's a cracker. We catch up with rising star of the weighing room, Tom Marquand. We preview a weekend full of classic action, including the Oaks Derby and Eclipse. How often can you say that we've got the Oaks Derby and Eclipse?
Well, it's a bumper weekend, isn't it? I mean, and like I say, could there be a better place to launch the podcast again than with this prospective action to come? And you know, all the other stuff that's going on at the moment. It's so exciting. Jump racing's returned. Mm-hmm. Mega flat racing. Life's great, isn't it?
I think the only weekend that will probably top this is maybe Chepstow at the start of the jump season. before speaking to the man of the moment and friend of the podcast, Oshie Murphy, later on. It's been a very, very difficult time. And many lives and livelihoods have been affected all around the world due to coronavirus. It's a desperate time for many, and if you've been directly affected by the coronavirus, I sincerely hope that life can get back to normality as soon as possible. And if you ever feel like you're in a bad place, there are many great charities out there, including the likes of Samaritans UK, and it's okay not to be okay. And my personal DMs and emails are always open if you need in chat. I am always going to be here to help whenever I can, and I'm sure that's like you, Charlie.
Yeah, I could only echo those sentiments. I mean, it's been a tragic sort of 10 days for racing, especially losing Liam Treadwell, who was one of my very, very good friends, and Rose Patterson, who I didn't know but was chairman of Aintree Racecourse and had done phenomenal things throughout her life as well. We are actually going to do an episode of the podcast delving a little bit deeper into the mental pressures of racing as a whole and that sort of stuff, speaking with sports psychologist, hopefully Kevin Tobin, who I thought spoke excellently on a recent Look on Sunday. So that's going to be coming in the future. But yeah, for right now, if anyone is struggling, please do reach out. There's so much help out there, and yeah, don't be alone.
Absolutely. I look forward to that episode, and hopefully you do look forward to that as well, and we can all learn a few things from that episode as well. But there's been a long gap between the last podcast that we recorded. What have you been up to, Charlie?
We've been very fortunate in that I get to live in a place where there's plenty of outdoor space. So I've been cycling a lot, running a lot, trying to work on my own personal fitness. I felt like after retiring last year, I'd started to let down a bit. I was getting a bit of stick off my wife. So, you know, I've sort of got myself right back into the swing of training. We've had quite a few horses still around, not as many as we would normally have at this time of year without any of the store horse sales. So we've had a reduced number of breakers in. But during the time as well, we've tried to do some things around the yard. There's a new all-weather schooling strip going in, wash bays, drying room.
And flush.
We've tried to really work on the facilities here and make things better moving forward. So yeah, plenty to keep us busy with. And like I say, I am looking forward though to life returning to a bit more normality. There's a three-year-old, a store sale, which is for unbroken three-year-olds coming up in Ireland in a couple of weeks' time. And it'll be interesting to see how the trade's been affected and how many people are looking to buy horses. But so that's where I've been at. Josh, what about yourself?
I've dusted the clubs off during this time, and I've been up the Warwickshire a few times, playing golf a few times a week, actually. And I shot 86 the other day. But that's not what's
fantastic,
more important.
Yeah.
Is obviously I've got to drive there and back, and in between I always see this cyclist who I try and speed up into, sometimes he's given me a few dirty looks. Do you know who that is?
I've actually found most road users very respectful of cyclists, but there's been this one incredibly tall blonde haired fellow driving quite a small car that seems to go around with a crazed look in his eyes, hardly looking where he's going. He's nearly wiped me out twice, which has been you, worryingly enough. And then you did say the other day, actually, that we could go around and have a knock of golf. It's actually a sport that I don't really excel at. I don't have a lot of time to put towards it. I played with a mate, played the other day, who plays off two, and he always jokes that I have more hits than the Beatles going round. So we will just have to set aside quite a bit of time to play 18 holes, but I am looking forward to that.
Maybe,
sure.
Maybe we do that at some point in the near future. Maybe we record a few of the shots.
Yeah, I think that could be good. Yeah, I'm sure our viewers and listeners would like to look at how definitely not to do it.
Yeah, I think so as well. I'm looking forward to that because I often get stick on this podcast for being lanky, looking like a giraffe, talking too much. It'd be quite nice to give you one back and say that you're a poor golfer.
Yeah, that's fine. I can take that. I have broad shoulders, and I think though, as the podcast
I say that, and then you beat me.
Exactly. I say as things have progressed, I think you've come into your own. Though I seem to be getting quite a bit of stick back, but yeah, I'd be fairly confident for you that you will excel certainly more than me on the golf course. Anyway,
yeah, I think it's the long reach. I'm too far at my own, you know. Anyway, let's move on to the first guest. I'm delighted that we're joined by one of the rising stars of the weighing room. I wouldn't even say that anymore. I think he is one of the stars of the weighing room at the moment, and he's been in phenomenal form since racing has returned. It's Tom Marquand. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Before this season, you spent a lot of time in Australia. What did you learn over there? Because you've come back, I personally feel, a different rider.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the racing is very different over there. You know, it's a lot. There's a large exaggeration on sort of quick decisions, tight tracks, and there's a lot of sort of awareness of tempo and whatnot. So, you know, I think coming back here and then coming to the big open tracks and still being in that mindset helps a hell of a lot.
Just with that in mind, was there ever a part of you that considered staying out there? Because you seem to build up a phenomenally big following and fan base really quickly, and a support of a lot of huge trainers. And I just wonder, from your own mindset, was there ever a moment you thought, well, maybe I could stay out here and establish myself there?
No, in all honesty, it never was something that felt like it was pulling me at all. Like, I think I got labelled Aussie Tom, and Everyone was taking me in really well, and you know, it was all greatly received. But there was there's never been that real sort of pull towards staying. But I think you know, I'm at a stage in my career in England where I don't really know which way it's going to go. And obviously, home's home, and that's where you want to have your main success. But you know, that's not to say I won't be trying to spend more time there and try and have the sort of continued rate of success over there, because it's a great place to be for a few months of the year.
When you say you still don't know which way it's going to go over here, do you genuinely still feel like that a bit? As in, because from the outside looking in, for Josh and I think we would see you as not to say established big name rider in the weighing room, but certainly you're on that level now. And it's interesting to see that you hear you say that you still feel like you're not sure which way it's going to go.
I guess you know, you'll have probably experienced it as a jockey. You know, it's a very good leveler, racing as a whole. And I think, you know, I obviously I'm very lucky. I ride a lot of winners, but I mean, I probably don't mean it in that regard. You know, I'd hope that I'd be able to continue to ride a lot of winners for the rest of my career. But I guess, you know, taking that real step up to the big stage is something that I want to do. And you know, obviously I'm getting more and more opportunities at that level, but I'm still not at the point where, you know, I'm not the first one in the contacts for trainers to go to if there's a spare Group One going. So you know, that's the point where I want to try and get to, and hopefully I will one day. But yeah, I guess that's probably what I mean by that. I'm not sure which way it's going to go because I've not hit that point yet. Hopefully I do one day.
Do you set yourself targets at the start of the season and say for 5 years' time with where you want to be?
Yeah, I mean, I do, but loosely. Obviously, this year there's been a bit of a big spanner in the works with the coronavirus. You know, I was hoping I'd get well over 100 winners again and hopefully finish in the first three of the championship. And you know, that was just sort of a loose aim and goal that I wanted to do, finishing fourth in the championship last year and getting to, I think I ended up on 136. I had less time to do it this year with being in Australia until sort of mid-late April. But then obviously now that's all changed. It's going to be pretty hard to hit figures like that. But you know, I think the sort of main aim of it all stays the same, getting a better grade of horse and try and mix it at the top meetings.
I just wanted to pick your brains about something that's been brought to my attention, like mental health and that those sort of things are very much in the media at the moment. And I did a bit for Race and Debate on Sunday, and it had been brought to my attention a lot of the leading riders with the restriction at the moment for one meeting a day due to coronavirus have actually found it quite sort of rewarding personally and for their own lifestyle, not having the pressure of having to go chasing two meetings. And some have actually spoke to Paul Struthers at the PJA about that they hope you guys can actually have that kept on even at the end of these restrictions due to coronavirus. And I just wonder what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we've all been speaking about it a lot over the past couple of weeks. And, you know, I personally support it. I found it's been fantastic. Obviously, there's always going to be the day that you're driving back from Newmarket via Newbury and you feel like you may as well pop in for a couple of rides, but realistically it's rare that is the scenario in which you're going to the double meeting. You know, normally say Nottingham, Kempton, you've got a 3-hour journey in between, there's traffic, you're hitting the M25 at what would normally be rush hour. You know, so it's a stressful way to go about your job, and you know, I think it kind of promotes a bit of an unhealthy lifestyle in the fact that we're always trying to push the boundaries and push the limits of, you know, how long it takes to get to X or you know, I think it's certainly something that I experienced abroad in Australia. You know, the top jockeys only ride 3 or 4 days a week. I mean, that's unheard of, bar possibly Ryan and Frankie over here. And I think, you know, it's something that we can definitely learn off. And this could possibly be a step in that direction, whilst also fitting English racing, the fact that we race 7 days a week.
Completely agree. I mean, the schedule you guys and girls have to keep to riding on the flat, I mean, it is actually a miracle no one's been seriously injured rushing between meetings as of yet. But the fact of the matter is, it has to come, Josh, it has to be a rule that's brought in, because unless you say this is what you can do, as long as there's going to be the opening to people riding at more than one meeting, jockeys are always going to try to, because there's going to be that pressure from owners and trainers to come and ride, and no jockey's ever going to turn down rides. You not think, Tom, for as long as it's still open to them?
Yeah, that's it. And I mean, you know, that's the mentality of a jockey. You know, if you're not hungry and you don't want to do well, you may as well pack up and go home and give up riding. So, you know, for as long as the pressure's on us and from ourselves, it's always going to be something that jockeys are going to want to do. I mean, I don't know. There may be another way to go around it, in that, you know, whether they capped the times between race courses that you're allowed to actually book a ride. I don't know whether that's an option or not, but you know, there's certainly ways that we can learn from this and take it into the future as something that can sort of be continued in some manner.
I'm lucky enough to follow M3 Racing on Twitter, and I think the work that they are doing at the moment is absolutely fantastic. You work with them closely. For me, it seems like they're sort of dragging racing into a new generation of social media. In your opinion, how come you got involved, and what do you think racing needs to do media-wise to ensure the longevity of the sport?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the way the whole world's going at the moment. You know, social media is a large part of everyone's life, and you know, Ben and Dan at M3 have done a great job in sort of starting to modernise I guess racing's outlook on that. They're taking racing to the public and people that probably wouldn't normally have any interest. You know, for example, I think it's Thursday evening. They're releasing the goggles are off, like a not a knockoff, but sort of similar to the gloves are off that Sky Sports have done, and you know, little things like that. I think it just brings us to a different crowd and adds a whole nother way of looking at racing, not just the stereotypical a big day out at Ascot with fancy clothes and lots of money. Do you know what I mean? Because that's not racing. That's not the reality. And you know, it's great. It's great the work that they're managing to do in sort of fetching that new crowd.
Yeah, I think I've seen your face maybe 4 or 5 times a day for the last 3 months. So it's
yeah, sorry about that.
It's brilliant. I know exactly what you're riding, where you are. It is fantastic. Obviously, your relationship with Holly Doyle is in the public eye now. A few sort of interesting things. You're both at the top of your game at the moment. Does she ever critique you on a ride? Does she ever sort of, are you ever in the doghouse if you sort of deny her a win?
No, I mean, I've probably said it a couple of, like, it's a very non-competitive household for both of us that are in a very competitive sport. But I think, you know, Matt Chapman always likes to have a bit of a tease at it, but I genuinely think people would be very disappointed if they knew how little competitiveness there was between us.
You say that, but be honest, you're happy. You are in a better mood when you come home knowing you've rode more winners than she has.
Genuinely, when she rode the Ascot winner, I was buzzing, and you know, it's great to be in an environment at home without even realising it that is helping us both further our career, life, everything. You know, we both got the same goals, we both got the same mindset, and I mean, you know, how much easier does that make it? You know, I've been disappearing off to Australia for the last couple of winters for 3 or 4 months ago, and you know, I guess in a normal relationship, if it was someone outside of racing, that would be pretty tough. But it's sort of that mutual understanding of what we have to do and what we have to sacrifice to get to the place where we want to be in our lives.
I heard she was actually really for you staying in Australia and pursuing the championship out there.
I know full well, if I suggested to my wife that I was going to go to Australia for the winter and she could stay and go to Lingfield and Kempton and wherever else, there would be absolute war on in this household and it wouldn't happen. So you must have a very understanding partner, that's all I can say.
Yeah, no, look, we're very lucky, and you know, I always think about it, you know, the odds, when you go to the racing school for your licence, they say the odds of you riding 10 winners is X percent, like 10%, the odds of you riding out your claim are like 2%, and you know, we've been together since we were sort of 14, 15, and for us both to have got to the point where we are, it's pretty unique and strange, I guess.
Do you talk about racing much in the evening, or do you tend to leave that alone?
Yeah, I do. We don't really, like, you know, we wouldn't sit down and watch a replay and talk through it or anything like that by any means. I mean, it's we just, I don't know, I guess, you know, obviously work does come home with us because it's that kind of job, but not to a ridiculous extent. You know, I think we've got a very nice balance of being able to switch off when we go home and think about other things and talk about other things as well.
I live for the day when you're 1-2 in the championship and there's a week left. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the house.
We'll have him back on and ask him how competitive things are now.
Absolutely. This weekend is an incredible, incredible weekend of racing. The Derby and the Oaks, and then the Eclipse on Sunday. Some brilliant cards across the weekend. One thing that's not gone unnoticed is that English King, who you've got a close relationship with, you've ridden him on his last start at Lingfield, and he's the favourite for the Derby. When stepping off him at Lingfield, what were you most impressed with?
I mean, to be honest with you, you know, obviously Lingfield is a great Derby trial for Epsom because you sweep in down the hill, around that bend, they have to pick themselves up. And just the way he he hadn't worked it all out. I got halfway down the hill. I was still trying to get him onto his left lead, and he was sort of fumbling his way down. And next thing, just at the sort of top of the bend, he just flicked over legs, carried himself around the hill, and got to the bottom of the straight and just picked himself straight back up. And I thought, yeah, I mean, it takes a pretty intelligent and balanced horse to be able to do that. And, you know, that was just one of the things that I thought, I mean, going into Epsom, having had that experience under his belt, I've no doubt that now he's going to get to the top of the hill. He's not even going to have a second thought about what he's doing. He's going to flick onto his left lead, sweep down around the bend. And having had that experience and just the way he did it, you know, it does certainly bear significance in going to Epsom.
Without doubt. I mean, look, we've got to touch on it, and I know it's been touched on a lot, as in, you know, the Derby favourite, you're a young man on the up, and it's all positives, but if there's been one sort of downturn this season, it must have been losing the ride on him. And you know, did you get a call from Ed Walker to let you know about this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's all been quite public over the last week or so. Ed and Bjorn handled it as well as possibly could. It's a tricky situation for them, and you know, obviously coming out with the news that I'm not going to be riding him was probably pretty hard for Ed to do. So, you know, it's competitive sport. Bjorn's been trying to win the Derby for many more years than I've been alive, and you know, I fully respect their decision, because you know, you get one shot at it, and they want to give themselves every best possible chance. And Frankie's had a lot of experience in the race, albeit I'd love to think I'd be up to riding a Derby winner if the horse was capable. You know, I can't help but sympathise with Bjorn for wanting to do that, because I think if I was in the same shoes, I'd be looking to an experienced hand to sort of give every possible chance.
Like I said, I think it's been, again, well publicised, everyone's respect for you in the way that you've handled it and the maturity that you've shown. But it was funny, just, I mean, after what happened last week with Liam Treadwell, Will Kennedy had a few of his round on Saturday, almost just to talk about him and everything like that, and get together, and we're just sort of going on about what's going on in the world, and he reminded me of a tweet that he put up the other day with your interview with Matt Chapman. He said, well, you know, this is great, but I would love to hear the Roy Keane version of this interview, and it just brought a bit of humour to what was quite a sad time, because like I say, from a jockey on the outside looking in, and like, I've never been fortunate enough to be associated with any sort of Derby horse ever, but it must have been galling for you to lose it. And like I say, underneath your professionalism and all of that, I can imagine there must have been a few sort of swear words and expletives used when it happened. And like I say, as in, it is credit to you, I think, how you've handled it. I know Josh sort of echoes those sort of thoughts about it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's always going to be hard, but I mean, you know, it's one of those things, and I think, you know, it's happened to a lot of people, it'll happen again, and I think, to be honest with you, you know, what has gone on with everything lately, you know, we had James Banks earlier in the year, and now Liam Treadwell. I mean, it doesn't take an awful lot to put it into perspective, put sort of life into perspective, not just something like that, you know, it's relatively insignificant compared to other stuff that's going on.
Very classy. Forgetting English King in the Derby, I think your ride, Khalifa Sat, is slightly overpriced at 33-1. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think so. Obviously, it's very easy to say when I'm the one riding him. But, you know, I thought his win at Goodwood the other day was very tough. I think he holds all the sort of creditable attributes that you'd want going into Epsom. He handles an awkward track in going around Goodwood twice. Oh, clearly got a great attitude. He's versatile with the ground. He's won on heavy and then quicker ground the other day.
Which ground would you prefer?
Pardon, sorry?
Which ground would you prefer with him?
I think nice fair ground. I don't think he loved that soft ground when he won his maiden, and I think, to be honest, it looked like he just pulled it out of the bag because he was classy and holds that ability. But you know, that I think realistically we're probably in for beautiful ground. There's a bit of range over the next few days, but without being too much. And I'm really looking forward to getting aboard him. Andrew Bolden's horses are absolutely flying as well, which is another positive.
Everyone loves a sort of redemption story in life. And after Tom Marquand has handled being jocked off the Derby favourite in the most classy fashion, wouldn't it be sort of some sort of poetic justice if you went and chinned English King in the Derby? Now, how would that feel?
Yeah, I mean, all any jockey wants to do from a young age is win the Derby. And, you know, whether it be to beat English King or beat any of the other horses, if I won the Derby, I think it would bear little significance to the fact that I'd have actually managed to win a Derby, you know. So, look, it's something that I look forward to hopefully doing one day. And, you know, it's great to have my first opportunity to try and do so this year.
Well, we both wish you the very best of luck. Thank you very much for your time today, and go well this weekend. It's a brilliant weekend of racing, and we hope to see you in the winner's enclosure.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
How brilliant was it speaking to Tom Marquand there? He seems like he's taken the English King situation very well. I felt extremely, extremely sorry for him, and it was a bitter pill to swallow. I couldn't imagine at a young age having done nothing wrong on a Derby favourite to be jocked off for Frankie Dettori, albeit it's Frankie Dettori. You've just got to feel desperately sorry for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear all the reasons behind it. And, you know, someone again put out there that, look, Ed Walker hasn't trained the Derby winner. Why don't they move the horse to John Gosden? Which I thought was quite funny. But that, of course, isn't going to happen. And as a trainer, you are way more involved with the horse. And Ed has brought the horse along perfectly through his career. So that was never going to happen. So I suppose if you're looking at it from Ed Walker and Bjorn Nielsen's point of view, they're trying to overcome that inexperience on the trainer department by employing the most experienced big race rider in the world, shall we say? Mm-hmm. And he couldn't be in better form. So I can see the logic. I feel really disappointed about it. I don't, from a point of view that Tom won the Derby trial on him, he's riding, I think, 17 winners in the last 14 days. He's at the top of his game. And you want to see these young people given a shot on the biggest stage. He looks to be one of the next generation of big race riders. And yeah, I'd love to see him on the horse, and I feel disappointed he's not.
Justice if he wins on Khalifa Sat. I think Tom has taken it very well, but I can imagine there might be a bit of Lewis Capaldi playing in the car after he got that cool sort of slow, sad songs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
did you ever do that when you were giving some bad news, put some sad music on?
I don't know if I put sad music on. I'm trying to think how you do deal with it.
Heavy metal man.
Not heavy metal. No. Probably some house music or something like that, you know. But I think what you do is, if it was me, I would ring someone that I trust and have a seriously good rant about it. Get it off your chest. Try and sort of then put it in a box and move forward, don't you? You know, as in, you know, if you're looking at it from Tom Marquand's point of view, he's got so much to look forward to. We've said so many times already on this podcast, he's a rising star of the weighing room. He's going to more than likely be in the top four or five in the championship this year. He's got emerging relationships with so many big trainers, and he's a star of the future, as you said, is unfair, because he's a star in his own right, as it is right now. But yeah, he's just got to keep going forward. And like you say, he was being very polite about it, and rightly so. He's got too much to lose. But I can imagine it would be seriously sweet satisfaction if he came swooping late and won the Derby on Saturday.
Who do you call when I mention Cooper Square?
I'm at the stage now where I don't really care about that anymore. So it was a seriously bad ride. I got it wrong. I actually think I did come out on Twitter and say so. So, you know, again, I mean, I do think moving forward as in the media, wouldn't it be great for the people within the media to critique rides and then have riders come on and give their response to maybe why they made those decisions? I think there's so much more within the racing media we can do to open up to the public the reasons why decisions are made in a races, which happen in a split second, especially on the flat. But I think, like I say, to bring the sport forward more and more, we need to have more analysis. We need to have more interaction from the main players, which are the jockeys. Wouldn't it be great to have someone on one of the channels, maybe not criticising, but questioning a ride, and have, like Tom Markle, like these young riders are so media savvy now, Rasheem Murphy, who's going to be our guest in a bit, come on and say, well, yeah, you're asking why I did that. Well, these are the reasons why I did that. Was it right or wrong? Who knows? But that's the mental process I went through to end up making that decision. Now, if it ended up being the wrong decision, but so be it. But do you not think that'd be great?
I do. I think racing is in... When I first sort of came into racing media, I found it quite bizarre at how little you can criticise, and it's all very protected. And I understand why, because when you're in a high pressure job, you're riding maybe a favourite and you get it wrong, I couldn't imagine how bad that would feel, let alone someone telling you how bad you were. I think it's interesting. I think it's something that racing should explore, but maybe in the right way. Let's move on to the first race that we're going to preview, and that is the Oaks. Not often, well, never can you say that an Oaks and a Derby are on at the same day. It's going to be fascinating. And the betting looks like this. Love is favourite, the Guineas winner at 11 to 10. Frankly Darling, who won the Ribblesdale at Royal Ascot, is 2 to 1. I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but Ennis Timon. No idea.
Ennis Timon, I think we'll go with.
15 to 2. Gold Wand, 14 to 1. Peaceful, 14 to 1, but won't run. Passion, 20 to 1. And Bardo's at 25 to 1. Now, I respect a lot of the challengers, the outsiders, but I think this is between two horses. I think this is Frankly Darling, and I think this is Love against each other in a league of their own. And what's interesting is Frankly Darling, we know she stays. Love has probably got better form by winning a Guineas, and she did it so impressively. But Love's breeding would suggest that she stays, do you think, Galileo?
I think so, you know, as in, I don't see any reason why she won't stay. You know, she's a sister to Mana Quarter, Mana Half, Mile Six winners. So there's every chance on pedigree she should stay. And she has a way of racing, do you not think, that is going to lend itself to her staying. And the interesting thing with that is, like you say, Frankly Darling has proven her stamina by winning the Ribblesdale. But at the same time, did she look 100% straightforward to you? I thought she looked quite keen early on. And yeah. I don't think... I thought Frankie was very good on her in making a tricky filly or a keen going filly look better than she was at Ascot.
After watching that Ribblesdale winner, I thought, wow.
Yeah.
This is some horse. And I thought, Love is going to have to be very, very good. And looking at the betting, I think Love might be slightly too short. I think even money is I don't think that much value in that whatsoever, especially because Frankly Darling could be brilliant. We're looking at John Gosden, mile and a half mares, or fillies rather, Fanny Logan, Enable. These are two. Enable's the queen. And he must know how good Frankly Darling is compared to those at this stage of their career. And, you know, Enable won the Oaks. It's a fascinating one. Who are you going to be siding with?
It, like you say, it's actually a really tough question. I think it's interesting as well that John Gosden has plumped just to go with Frankly Darling, hasn't he? Because there were other contenders as well. I'm going to side with Love because I just thought she was fantastic in the Guineas. And she just reminded me of one of those Aidan O'Brien fillies that could just really keep improving. But I'm going to counter that with, I'm not sure there's that much between them. And
oh, don't put them both up.
But possibly, Frankly Darling, do you think represents more value?
Yeah, I
think
Love will win. That's what I was going to say.
I think the prices, Frankly Darling, is more value. But then you're looking to back a winner, so I'm with Love.
I'm going to be with Frankly Darling, I think, purely because the stamina is no question. We know she stays. You'd imagine she's only had three runs to date. So that experience at Royal Ascot against a decent field will do her well. You'd imagine she'd learn a lot from that and maybe come on for it as well. So you've got to expect improvement from both. But Frankly Darling, we know she stays.
My just worry of Frankly Darling But then I suppose that, no, in fact, that's the most ridiculous thing I'm going to say.
No, say it.
Because I was, you know, the atmosphere of an Oaks day, yeah. But it's going to be very different this year, isn't it? So that, you know, that was a really silly thing to say, you know, so it could work in her favour.
I don't know how she's going to fare with 500 people in there.
Exactly.
In the race course.
Yeah. Duh. You know, no, exactly. That wasn't a great thing to comment. So, yeah. But I it's still the same thing, though, that the Oaks by nature is going to be highly competitive. It's around that undulating track at Epsom, and much as Ascot has its undulations too, she's got to go and prove that she's straightforward enough to handle that. And I just think Love is maybe the more furnished filly at this stage. Anything at a bigger price?
No, I don't think.
I just thought Oriental Mystique at Newbury the other day didn't have a lot of luck in running, finished fifth, and was trapped wide the whole way behind Franconia. And I just thought maybe at like 33, 40 to 1, she could possibly have a small place chance, because something's going to have to be placed, even if it is those two finishing the first two places.
Hopefully it can be Frankly Darling, number one, Love, two, and then that, three. Moving on to the Derby, you've put up an evens favourite for the Oaks. Let's see what you go with in the Derby. Are you going to be siding with English King? Let's just run through the betting first. English King, the impressive Lingfield winner. We obviously spoke to Tom about him earlier on in the show. 9-4 favourite. Short price, ridiculous price. The horse that should be favourite, Kamiko, is second favourite at 4-1. Russian Emperor, 6-1. Mogul, disappointing at Royal Ascot, 7-1. Vatican City, last seen in the Guineas, 9-1. Highland Chief, 16-1. And Pile Driver at 16-1. We've spoken to Tom about English King. Did that give you more confidence about him?
I think he told us what we kind of all already know, don't we? That English King was very impressive at Lingfield in this trial. You know, as in, it was noticeable how well he picked up, wasn't it, up the straight. And
should he be 9-4 for a Derby? After three runs, winning two and winning a Lingfield trial, surely this is... Anthony Van Dyke won the race last year at Lingfield, and he went on to win the Derby. De Tory's on. But he beat Berkshire Rocco, who's not a bad horse, and he couldn't have done it easier. And I suppose he sort of franked the form behind Santiago at Ascot. But I think this is blown out of proportion. 9-4 is ridiculous. We're talking about the second favourite beating Pinatubo, Wichita in the Guineas. And he wasn't really meant to be quick enough to win there.
I completely agree with those sentiments. I mean, I'm amazed Kamiko isn't favourite. We're going to hear from Ashin later on what his thoughts are on that. And we can actually ask him that question, can't we? As in, do you find it surprising why he's not favourite? He's the Guineas winner. He looks for all the world like he's going to stay further. The reports are that he's in incredibly good form running into this. And yeah, to me, he ticks all the boxes right now. And 4-1 is probably a huge price about a Guineas winner in a Derby.
The only box he doesn't tick is stamina.
Yeah.
He won a Red Hot Guineas, and Connections have sort of said his optimum trip would be about 10 furlongs. You'd imagine, if it was a normal season, you'd probably see him turn up in an Eclipse, because that'd be his ideal trip. He won the Verton Futurity at 2, and usually that is a horse that goes on and stays at 3, a mile and a half. Do you think he's going to struggle staying this trip?
I honestly don't. As in, he met all sorts of trouble in the Guineas, didn't he? And it was like he hit the line incredibly strong, I thought. He looks to have a style of racing that would lend itself to him getting the trip. As you say, he was a Group 1 winner over a mile at 2. You're saying in a normal year he'd go for the Eclipse? I'm not so sure he would. I think Sheikh Fahad would love to win a Derby. There's not many other... You know, you can't conceivably create a Derby contender with better credentials than a Group 1 mile winning 2-year-old who's won the Guineas at 3. I'd have thought he'd be going for the Derby, whatever the situation was. And yeah, I mean, I think 4-1 is a crazy price.
I think 4-1 is a crazy price. May not be the Eclipse, maybe the Champion Stakes at Ascot at the end of the season. That could be...
Yeah, of course. But I think right now, if you are working through the 3-year-old season, as Tom said earlier, you only get one chance at winning a Derby every year. and they only get, you know, 1 year of their life where they can go for this. I would have been amazed if Kameko had jumped the Derby in a normal year. I think he'd have always come here. Like I say, I think he ticks so many boxes.
I think what is interesting is master trainer Aidan O'Brien has plenty of runners in the race, but not the first two in the betting. He does have the third and fourth, however. Russian Emperor, who won at Ascot, I don't think he's good enough. I'm going to draw a line through him now. I think Ryan Moore will also choose to ride Mogul, who they can't stop raving about, and it's the horse that I will be siding with. I think there's a few question marks around him after the last run at Ascot, and I think you completely write it off. You can tell before the race he was stocky. I think he needed the run for fitness anyway, and he's a full brother to Japan, and he needed that run last year, and those sort of types that they've been known to be quite difficult to get fit. He blew up in the straight. I think, honestly, draw a line through that run. I think he'll be right there in the Derby.
Look, I can hear that for sure. I mean, I think you'd said beforehand that when we'd done something, some other media work, that the best plan of action would have been to back Mogul at 9 or 10 to 1 for the Derby before Royal Ascot. There was always going to be the concern. I think Aidan had made noises that it was going to be a struggle getting him there. The fact that he turned up has to be a positive, and that he's had a run and blown the cobwebs away. I still think he's got to prove he's good enough to win a Derby, because that has to be the question mark, you know, as in, like, let's not get away from that. On form, he's lacking a bit. But it's hard to shy away from Aidan O'Brien giving all the right signals, you know.
Well, Pile Driver, who's 16-1 for this race, beat him 4 lengths at Ascot. But there's a reason why Mogul's 7-1 and Pile Driver is 16-1. That's because they think a lot of Mogul.
They think a lot of him and connections, you know, as in without being rude or disrespectful, because Willie Muir is a very good trainer. Martin Dwyer has been a fantastic jockey over his career. But there's also an element with this price that it's because it's Aidan O'Brien and most likely going to be Ryan Moore. And I would actually argue if Ryan plumps for him, he could end up going off quite a bit shorter than 13-2 on the day.
I definitely think so. I'd imagine he'd be around the 5-1, 4-1 mark. The two interesting runners for me are Vatican City and Highland Chief. I think Highland Chief, this might be a step too far for him. I thought he was impressive when winning last time. I just immediately after, he didn't strike me as a Derby winner. I think I would have liked to seen him go for a Dante or something like that. Vatican City, an interesting Aidan O'Brien horse. Many have talked his chances up. What do you make of him?
Well, I mean, look, you have to look at it. And the fact of the matter is, he was second in an Irish Guineas, wasn't he? His big thing. And again, I always think Aidan, he gives little snippets away. And he keeps saying stamina with this guy, question mark, you know, as in he's saying he's the one of his with the best form, which is without question. He was second to Siskin in an Irish Guineas. But there seems to be this thing with them that they are wary of whether or not he's going to stay. You look through his pedigree and they're all group winners. Glen Eagles, Myler, Marvellous, Myler, won an Irish 1,000 Guineas. Happily, mile winning group one, winning two-year-old. So there has to be a slight feeling with him that can he stretch out to a mile and a half? If he can, he's a very dangerous opponent, isn't he?
Absolutely. And doubt Aidan O'Brien at your peril, because he will crop up in these races and he will win.
Do you think there's an element, though, that he's going in mob-handed because he hasn't got a standout? He's got lots of good contenders.
I think he does have a standout. I just think he's trying to disguise him, and that's Mogul.
Really?
Yeah, they just think the world of this horse. And if he's trained by anybody else, he wouldn't be 7-1. And especially after that run at Ascot, I just think he's come on leaps and bounds and he could really be the one that improves. And a bit like Japan last year, in the Dante was beaten 6 lengths by Telecaster, then suddenly is right there beaten less than a length in the Derby.
I think we can all see that argument. I'm going to chuck another one at you. Mohican Heights that finished just in front of Mogul at Ascot.
Don't think he'll be good enough. I think, it wouldn't be for me.
I think he just looked like a horse to me that would improve from Ascot, and it's a positive that I think David Simcock has all of a sudden found a little bit of form. You know, 2 from 16 the last 14 days. I think before Ascot, he was struggling for a winner. I just thought, again, whether he can win a derby, I could see him running okay. You know, I think he stays well.
Now, let's move on to...
Hang on. No. We've got to... What are we selecting?
Mogul, a 7-1 each way.
I'm going to...
And Kamiko, if you wanted to be more pandic going into it.
I'm
going
to go Kamiko for me. And like I say, just at a big price, I'm going to chuck up Mohican Heights each way.
Yeah, well, Racing Post Live is sponsored by Betfair and they're all into laying and backing. I'd be laying English King. Moving on to the Eclipse. What a race this is. The return of the Queen and Abel. She's just fantastic. Last scene when finishing, not winning the Arc. It was a horrible day for most. And my good friend Joe Tuffin experienced that at the track. And there's pictures of him rolling around on the floor, just in disgust, emotionally broken after going over to watch her. This is an interesting race. Why? Because Enables there, Gayath, Japan, Deirdre. I think there's plenty other in there. Lord North, the improver as well. Lord North was so impressive at Ascot.
Have we confirmed whether he... Does he definitely go?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. Enables returning, and she's a very short price. But Gayath was so impressive on his last start, beating Stradivarius and Anthony van Dijk. Japan was disappointing at Ascot. You spoke about him earlier on. And Deirdre, we've not seen him for a while. I think Enable's there to be beaten.
Just repeat that. Just do Deirdre, we've not seen her for a while.
Oh. And Deirdre, we've not seen her for a while. I think Enable's there to be beaten in the Eclipse on Sunday. Why? Because, so Gayath ran in, what did he run in? It's the Commonwealth Cup.
No, he ran in the Prince...
Coronation Cup.
The Coronation Cup, sorry, yeah. At Newmarket, yeah. Yeah.
I think Enable is there to be beaten. Why? Because Gayath ran in the Coronation Cup, beating Stradivarius, Anthony van Dijk, some good horses over a mile and a half. And he went from the front, pulled William Buick's arms out, and looks a nightmare to ride, but he was electric. William Buick almost just said, go on him, and he just went. And that was over a mile and a half. I think if he's that keen, he doesn't have to worry about being that keen over 10 furlongs because they know he stays a mile and a half. So they can just let him bowl along. And I think that'll see him right at his very best. And with Enable probably not being 100% because she's not had the run, we don't know that for sure. I think Gayath could be the one to turn over Enable here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I just can't warm to Gayath. I don't know what it is about him. And it, he, like you say, it was an explosive performance at Newmarket. The time was electric. And he beat Stradivarius in behind, who's gone and franked the form. And granted, it was over the wrong trip for him. And yeah, I can see Enable being vulnerable. I really hope not, because I think, again, it's the most sporting thing from Khalid Abdullah to put her back into training as a six-year-old on the back of everything that she's done. You know, she doesn't have to prove anything anymore. And like I say, I think it's phenomenal that she's back. And you can only imagine that she's back because they'd really like her to win a third Arc.
That's what I was going to say. I think that is the goal this year. I think in seasons prior, it's been notch up a few wins in these group ones and then go for the Arc. I think their sole target is to see Arc.
I'm sure you're right, but at the same time, another Eclipse would be quite nice too along the way. I'd be surprised if she's coming here without John Gosden thinking she's ready. I think the running style of Gayath, she's going to need to be very ready, isn't she? Because like you say, you would imagine dropping back the 10 furlongs. Granted, Sandown's a stiffer track, but I can't believe William Buick's going to change much. He's going to go forward. He's going to let him have his head and have confidence in the fact that he's 2 furlongs down in trip and though stays further than the 10 furlongs, surely he's going to ride him very aggressively. I'm really hoping we see a bit more spark from Japan. I'm being honest, you quite rightly called out that you felt that he was a sort of horse that would be vulnerable first time out and would improve through the season. I accept all that. without question, I still thought it was a bit lackluster for me at Ascot, and I hope we can see more this time, if I'm honest.
It was the same performance as Mogul at Ascot. They both are full brothers to each other, and they both just needed the run, and they both blew out of the straight on the first time of the season.
Very possibly. I suppose from my own point of view, I just felt that maybe Japan was the sort of horse that was really going to come forward at four, and he'd possibly go and win at Ascot in spite of needing the run.
If Mogul wins the Derby, Japan will not go off the current price that he is.
It's a really good point. Very, very possibly. Yeah. I mean, it's like you say, maybe as a family, they all do quite well for some time off, and it takes.
They're like morning people where they need a couple of hours to get
just to warm into things. And if that's the case, Japan at 6-1 is as it stands right now is a very attractive price, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But if we were to briefly touch on Lord North, he was, as far as Japan was a disappointment, he was electric at Ascot. He's improved so much with running in handicaps last year. Do we think he's good enough to beat an Able?
He's certainly a worthy contender, isn't he? And yes, I think if Enable is, as you say, being trained with the autumn in mind, then a very fit Lord North, who's had two starts already this season, shown he can handle the step up to Group 1 company, has a very sort of similar sort of profile now to a very good horse that John Gosden trained to win the Cambridgeshire called Hailing, that then went on to do even better when it was transferred over to Godolphin to Saeed Bin Saror. And he could be the one that could go and upset the two main protagonists if he runs on Sunday.
I think what's interesting is Gayath has shown frailties when a horse has gone up and sort of given him a match early on. And I think that is very important for him losing.
But who's going to do that on Sunday?
That's my point. Yeah. I'm all over Gayath. I think he'll beat Enable.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if Gayath gets loose on the front end, he's going to be very, very hard to peg back. It's almost, without talking team tactics, it's surprising maybe that Aidan doesn't have something in here that could be used. Mm-hmm. To set the pace, shall we say?
To make sure it's an end-to-end gap.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I feel like I'm a bit surprised about that. For me, I think if he turns up, I'd side with Lord North. I was very impressed with him at Ascot. But whether John Gosden will go down that road and let the two take each other on.
It'd almost be a bit of a Nike de Boinville when Verdana Blue beat Bouvidaire. He's almost, if Lord North was to beat Enable, there'd be
Oh, is this really happening?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, great. Can't believe I've done that. Wow. I think it'd be quite awkward.
Very possibly.
I think it'd be a quiet one home.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what I do think is if they all turn up, it's going to be a serious Sunday showdown, isn't it? And it's going to lay down some proper markers for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Now, let's speak to the man of the moment, Oshie Murphy. He won the Guineas on Cameco, beating the hyped-up Pinatubo at the time, who will beat Siskin. And I'll get onto that in a different podcast. Let's speak to Oshie Murphy. Oshin, it's great to speak to you. We've had you on before on the podcast, but it's great to have you on. The big return, we like to say. This season's been phenomenal for you so far, and I think you've just gone from strength to strength, and that all came together when Cameco won the Guineas. How did it feel to win the Guineas?
It was incredible. Bearing in mind the horse is trained by Andrew Balding, Sheikh Fahd was sat in his house two miles away, in fact, and there was no crowd there, but it was a dream come true. Kipco have sponsored the Guineas, I think, for 10 years, and now they own Kipco, Qatar Racing is a subsidiary company of Kipco, and they have the fastest Guineas winner ever. It's just beyond belief.
Do you think he's going to stay? That's the one thing that's on everyone's mind going into the Derby. Do you think he's going to stay?
So many people have asked me, and I really and truly, I don't know. I always felt the horse would stay a mile and a quarter, even at two, we were getting that, you know, kind of feeling, particularly when he won at Newcastle and I couldn't pull up after the line, where he broke a track record as well. He hit the line very strongly in the Guineas, stronger than anything, in fact. So we're very hopeful, but a mile and a half is a lot further than he's ever raced before, so let's see.
With regard to the derby then on Saturday, you know, there's lots of talk all the time about Leicester being, well, Leicester was the master around there and having that box seat sort of handy away, one off the rail. How will you then approach the race itself from a riding point of view with the slight doubt about Kamiko's stamina?
Yeah, until I see the draw and who's riding what and what exactly will run, I haven't given it any thought. I'd imagine I'll be a little bit patient on him. He likes to get a bit of cover, not that he pulls or anything, but he loves having horses to aim at, and he picks up very strongly. So I like to ride a kind of a quiet race as such, and hopefully save as much energy as we can, and then let him roll down the straight. That would be an ideal situation.
I think the way he sort of relaxes into a rhythm in a race is going to give him every chance. But just for a bit of insight to the listeners, when you're riding a horse that has question marks over stamina, as a jockey, do you go out there with the mentality that I'm going to ride them like they will stay? Or do you, in the back of your mind, ride them thinking I'm going to try and save a bit to help them stay?
He's really chilled out, and he has been in every run. So hopefully I can just pop well, get a position in the first three furlongs of the race, and then put him to sleep. Whether that's kind of sat fourth, fifth, or a little bit further back, sorry. But I completely understand where you're coming from. Often a trainer will say to you, "Oh, really ride this one cold," in the hope that they will stay. But the mindset I'm going to approach this race with is forget about the distance for, you know, momentarily, and just ride them like I normally do, which is relax and finish off.
Now, Ashin, I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago and we were talking about exciting two-year-olds to look out for this season. And you mentioned a horse called Tactical, saying that he could be the best two-year-old or the one that you like the most at Andrew Bowling's yard. Now, I stupidly didn't back him for Royal Ascot, And it kicks me every single time. Were you impressed with how well he won that day?
I thought the race set up well for him. The horse isn't a five furlong horse, but the Windsor Castle looked a good option, bearing in mind we had Bright Devil, obviously, in the Chesham. The Coventry is often a very strong race, and the Learjet was in the Norfolk, and obviously Imperial Force, who I like a lot as well, was going to go for that. So our hands were tied a little bit as to what Tactical was going to run in, but he's going to improve stepping up in distance. I think the July Stakes is on the horizon. He did a little bit on the grass today. He takes his work very well. He's a very mature two-year-old, and we've been thrilled with him all the way along. Bright Devil, actually, who ran disappointing on slow ground in the Chesham, he worked very well this morning, and I'd be keen to give him another chance, particularly as the season progresses, because he's a very different physical to Tactical. He's much weaker.
Andrew Bolden's horse are in phenomenal form this season and have been since the start. Is there any particular reason for that? Like a better group, or is there anything that you can lay your finger on as to why they're going so well?
I'm pleased you touched on that. Year on year, the quality of horse has improved since, you know, it's hardly believable. I arrived in Parkhouse Stables October 2012, and the best horse we had in the yard was a Group 3 horse called Highland Knight. And now everywhere we look, there's group horses. So Andrew's done a tremendous job. First of all, upgrading the quality of horse, and that's thanks to the owners, and staff-wise, the riders are very, very good. So everything has improved. And then most important thing is the horses are healthy. And if they can maintain their health and none of them cough through a year, then we'll have a lot of fun.
We had Tom Marquand on earlier on in the podcast, and we spoke to him about the work that you're both doing at M3 Media, or all the work that you're doing together. Obviously, you work with them closely, and in your opinion, we asked Tom this as well. Why is there interest from you to work with a company like that, and what does racing need to do media wise to sort of ensure the longevity of the sport?
Well, I was keen that when I'm in Japan, people can kind of follow the racing a little bit, because otherwise it's quite difficult to keep an eye on the results. And hence, on my website, I did a kind of weekly blog and latest news thing in English and in Japanese. So I thought that was helpful, and that's where the idea was inspired from. I think N3 Media approached me firstly, and then Tom Markwell, Kieran Fallon and Ben Curtis afterwards, because they wanted to have a group of jockeys that they could get behind and try and involve people that might not be interested in racing ordinarily. And they've done a good job. I think traffic on the website, and certainly my Twitter and Instagram, I think for everyone, the other three boys as well, I think the figures have really improved. So and they've made interesting content.
Absolutely. I've really enjoyed that. And do they have any sort of involvement when you're the video that you did that was received very well, when you were driving home talking about the 2-year-olds that you rode? Do they sort of prompt you to do stuff like that? Is that sort of something that you do speak about?
No, I just do whatever I feel like.
You're just the man.
People were asking me on Twitter why I didn't hit this horse, or why I didn't look like I was that hard in this one. But I think I rode 5 2-year-olds that day. And Tactical Imperial Force, Bright Devil, and 2 for James Tate. And one of James Tate came out and won the next day. But if I had a hired race that day, it wouldn't have done so. So I just wanted to explain to people.
I think it's fantastic, and it is the future. The more the main protagonists, and so which is the jockeys, and can open up to the public about why things occur in races and the decisions that are made, one, I think it will improve the trust from the public into what we're doing, and two, I think it will help to bring more people into the sport, having that sort of ability to feel a sense of closeness and accessibility to you guys as jockeys, do you not think?
Yeah, absolutely. It can only be a good thing. I'd like to see the sport grow as much as it can. They do incredible things for boxing, and if we just take horse racing, is not related to UFC, but Conor McGregor single-handedly sold UFC to everyone. We all know what it is, and that's just down to him, in my opinion. So if we can take little snippets of what he was able to do without the bad language and the drama, or some of the drama, then that would be great.
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't want to see you doing all the things that he did, Oisin. That might bring the sport into disrepute as well, though.
I'd like to see Oisin sort of going out to a ride and waving the arms and giving it a big one.
Yeah,
with the music in the background, yeah.
I think, what about jockey celebrations?
Well, I'm not very good at it, because I haven't mastered one. I just get very excited and then a little bit embarrassed.
Again, I think the more that people can, I think it's another very prominent thing in the media with everything that's going on at the moment, and I think the more we can open up and show more emotion in all ways about things, I think it's only for the better. Yeah.
Who do you think is the one rider that when they do celebrate a winner, you go, "Oh, they've got a bit about them."
It's the most easy. It's Frankie, isn't it? As in, like, he has a trademark celebration.
It's the point in the air.
Everyone knows it's coming, and it creates a sort of the public buy into it, and whereas, I suppose I would be as guilty of it. I found, there's an element of it you find a bit cringeworthy, and like, oh, I don't know about that, where I like to see people going absolute bananas when they ride a winner and the flying dismount. But when you look beyond your own personal feelings about it, the public as a whole absolutely love it. You know, as in you see like people racing to get round the winner's enclosure when Frankie's rode what used to be a Group 1 winner. Now it seems to be any winner he rides, you know. but they want to be there to see him do the flying dismount.
Absolutely. I think that's the reason why Jesse Lingard's still in the United top with all his dance moves. I definitely think that could work for you, Oisin. Maybe a few dabs or a few moonwalks getting off a horse. Thank you very much for speaking to us, and we hope you have a brilliant, brilliant weekend. And we hope that Kimiko can...
Can we just have a quick one? Deirdre on Sunday. Any chance of, I mean, what looks an absolutely vintage eclipse of getting in on the act?
Yeah, I hope so. I was kind of thinking it might be a 3-run race with Gaeth, Enable and Deirdre, and I could sit, it would be like Gaeth leading, Enable sitting second and Oisin sitting third, but and hopefully they get going early and Gaeth isn't as fresh as he was at Newmarket and Enable needs to run. But I think Japan in there now as well, Lord North might not take his chance. It's going to be a really, really tough race. But look, she's in super order. She breezed on the Albahatchi this morning. I saw the work. She's in good shape. But take nothing away from this race, guys. It doesn't come any better than that. They're all champions in their own right.
Absolutely. Best of luck for the weekend. We really hope you can have a successful one, and I hope that you can be lifting the trophy of the Derby on Saturday.
Thanks very much, guys.
I absolutely love him. I think he's so good for the sport.
I think today we've seen two young riders, one that's a champion already, another that's a potential champion, that are showing the way, aren't they, for riders coming through about how to conduct yourself within the media. There's an openness about them. You get the impression they absolutely love horse racing as well, which is great to hear. And the very best of luck for them. I mean, like I say, it, for any young riders out there, that's the standard you're sort of trying to attain in all aspects of your job. That's the most important thing to write. The riding is only part of it. If you can make yourself great at all those other aspects, and social media management is becoming a huge part of that, it all adds up to an even better package.
Absolutely selfless with both of their times. And I do hope they have a brilliant weekend. Charlie, I hope you have a brilliant weekend. Where will you be watching the Derby?
Where will I be watching the Derby on Saturday? I'm actually going up to see my brother and his wife in Sheffield. So I'm going to get up there in time to sit down and watch the Derby with them.
If you did enjoy this, then make sure you do tell a friend. It always helps. The more people that watch, the more things we can do, or listen, rather. If you did enjoy this, we hope you have a brilliant weekend. If you didn't, I hope you have a stinker. I'll see you in a bit, and this has been the Racing Riot Podcast.